My name is Shane Coughlin, and I am the coordinator of Free Software Foundation Europe's legal activities. Today, I'm here to talk about free software in the ICT mainstream. Free software is no longer just a good idea used by a few people. It's no longer the preserve of just technical experts or a few far-sighted computer scientists. Free software is now manifestly part of the mainstream of information and communication technology. Research by the United Nations University, UNU Merit, has shown that 32% of the European ICT sector will be involved in free software one way or another by 2010. Free software will account directly or indirectly for 4% of the European Union's gross domestic product. In other words, we are now absolutely central. The freedoms to use, study, share, and improve software have become critical to everyone. They have done this because they offer benefit. They offer real benefit to individuals, to organizations, and to businesses. The four freedoms offer tangible, real benefit to society as a whole. Nowadays, when people speak of a free software community, what they are referring to in truth is the digital community, everyone who's using computing. Every type of interest, from non-commercial to commercial to governmental. It's a very interesting time. It's a very interesting time because our proposal for a different paradigm of using software has been conclusively proven. Free software is different. It's different to proprietary software. It's different to what people became used to in the 80s and the 90s. And free software has proven that it is a good paradigm. It's a compelling paradigm. It's something that will affect everyone increasingly in the coming years. The reason that we have succeeded in becoming mainstream is because our core concept of freedom offers more benefit for more people most of the time. It's something that just works. However, the success of our paradigm means change in the free software community. At the very beginning of this talk, I said that free software is spreading, and it is. And what this means is that more people are engaging with free software. More people are using free software. And that means more diversity. That diversity is a wonderful opportunity for us, but it's also a challenge. It means an awful lot of new people joining our community. It means new discussions, new discourses. It means that we have to think about growth, and we have to think about diversity, and we have to think about how that impacts free software. We are used to communicating the ideas of free software in a relatively closed group of technical experts. But now we're looking at all types of people. People like myself, I'm a political scientist, actively engaging in free software, actively using it, and striving to understand its deeper implications for society. As we face our growing community, as we face the consequences of our success, we must get used to the idea that we need to maintain integrity and core values. We must not become distracted by our success. We must remember why free software worked. We must remember that the freedoms to use, study, share, and improve software are the reason we are here. This is not about petty, entrenched positions. This is about very large issues that affect everyone. Whether you like free software because you are purely deterministic and you just want to program efficient code, or whether you like free software because you want to have a freer society in general terms, we can all agree that the free software paradigm offers great benefit. We need to maintain that discourse and to continue explaining to people why this idea is good and to ensure that the fundamental concepts don't become diluted in our success. And when people use our discourse and broaden our discourse into other reaches of the digital world or of society at large, let's help them by explaining clearly how we got here and why. One thing we have to do, and this transcends software alone, one thing we have to do in technology is work towards freedom and fairness for all. We are in an interesting situation where, unfortunately, most of the benefit of all technology, be it free software or proprietary software or hardware, is limited to around 1 billion people. Now, we have over 6 billion people in this world. We have to think of ways that we can help more people benefit from free software across the globe, and we're in a unique position to do so because free software is so readily adaptable and transferable. So we have to think about access, we have to think about spreading freedom, and we have to think about fairness. And that discourse transcends simple ideas of, say, accessing source code. We have to think about fairness of access and knowledge transfer. We have to think about the implications of, for instance, the European Union having a massive amount of highly skilled programmers engaging with free software. And we have to think about how can we share their experience, their knowledge and potential with other developing areas of the world that would benefit from their pure knowledge. These are very large issues that we have to engage with. These are things that are going to consume our lives over the next 10 or 20 years if we push for free software and we push for the values behind it. My own part in this giant discourse is relatively limited. I manage Free Software Foundation Europe's legal affairs. I manage our legal project. It's called the Freedom Task Force, which sounds a little bit superhero-ish, but it's not. It's actually loads of lawyers, so they mainly talk about golf. However, you wouldn't believe what happens when they get drunk. Anyway, yes, my part in this giant potential of free software is legal infrastructure. It's my job to help build legal infrastructure in Europe so that projects, developers, businesses, governments can find answers to legal questions easily. That's important because, of course, as you all know, free software is actually maintained through licenses, so it has a very strong kind of legal undertone to it. The most popular licenses you're aware of, like the GNU GPL, are legal documents, and they use copyright law to ensure that free software works. By building legal infrastructure, I can help make sure that if people ever have any questions about how these licenses work or why, they can find good answers. And by good answers, I mean accurate answers, accurate in their context, accurate for each individual European country, be it common or civil law. I also work on things like general support for the community. I work to help projects discuss difficult issues like how do you grow and maintain your legal integrity. And I work on issues like antitrust cases. We had a little bit of an antitrust case with Microsoft for the last most of a decade. And it's gone pretty well. Who saw the news this week? 899 million euro more on their fine. And by goodness, did they deserve it. I work on this stuff, and I'm trying to make sure that regardless of what people choose, be it free software or not, that in Europe we are fair. In Europe, people cannot abuse their position through dubious means to stop what they don't like. Let's have fair competition and let the best paradigm win. And of course it's our paradigm, which is good news, but you know, we'll do it fairly. We don't need to cheat. So I work on stuff like that, and quite frankly most of it is too boring to tell you about. It's incredibly tedious legal work, and there's over 55 lawyers in my network, so you can just picture what that's like. But that's what I do. That's my small contribution. If you want to put it in broad and really great sounding terms, what I do is I help people understand the legal implications, I help prevent issues, and I help facilitate benefit. Now, the real question is, given that we have this amazing paradigm, what are you going to do about it? You know, free software is not a top-down thing. The Free Software Foundation Europe, it does not go around trying to boss the entire free software community. Free software is about loads of people agreeing that an approach is good and then working together to make it happen. And we've done that. We have a very good operating system with GNU Linux. We have, you know, some really, really good licenses out there. Different people like to debate their licenses over beer. The modified BSD guys pick on the GNU guys, and they pick on each other, and they just have a lot of fun doing that. Though they're all fundamentally talking about free software, and they all should hug and make up. What are you going to do? What's your part in free software now? You know, we are here. We are mainstream. This is our day. We've finally done it. We're going to be everywhere. Everywhere that people use computers, we're there. So what's your contribution going to be towards that? You need to think about that, because you are the people who are making this difference. It's you who brought free software to where it is now, whether you developed it or used it or told a friend that it was a good idea or told a friend it was a stupid idea and got a debate going. No matter what you did, you helped make this happen. Now that you're responsible for 4% of the European Union's gross domestic product, how are you going to leverage that? How do we take this further? How do we make this matter to more people? More people in our expanding European Union, more people in the other European countries, and what about the fantastic potential we have to leverage some of this benefit to help the developing world, the other 5 billion people who need help to raise their standard of living and raise their opportunity? I think that's the question you've got to ask, and I think one thing that I'd like to do, just very briefly, is point you in the direction of some projects that could probably do with an extra hand, because they're so successful that they're growing at a ridiculous rate. One project worth looking at, if you're a hacker type, is the KDE project. KDE has been very busy with its newest graphical user interface, desktop, and it's looking great, and they're going to be deploying soon. So if you're a hacker with spare time, go and help them. This will be another cool thing in free software. It'll help a lot of people. If you're interested in data issues, go think about open documents. You know, have a think about stuff like the ISO standard open document format and the freedoms it offers to people. And think about challenges to it, like the proposed specification MS-OOXML by Microsoft. Maybe enter that discourse. There's a new thing called Document Freedom Day, where a group of different organizations involved in free software and document access and free infrastructure got together, and they decided to try and promote genuinely open document formats by having a specific day a year when we focus on that. Also think about helping organizations like FSFE. We do a lot of stuff. I've got all of my little lawyers, and we also have all of our outreach activities. We go to conferences, we talk to people, we do training, we do consultancy. We try to turn up to answer questions wherever we can be useful, and that means we need you to help. We need you to help us go to conferences. We need you to help pass out leaflets to people. We need you to help direct people to us if they have questions. Let's move forward with that. Let's go forward and let's deal with our coming issues, like software patents always coming back, growth, change, diversity, opportunity, and challenges. Well, that's what I want to talk about. I'm done. And I'd like to invite any questions from anyone in the audience. Howard's. question. Someone wants to ask about patents, you know it. Well, if there's no question, then I'm going to shut up. What happened in Geneva? My goodness. Well, I was in Geneva at the same time as the ISO ballot resolution meeting. I was not one of the members of one of the delegations to the ballot resolution meeting, though I was at a conference about open standards and the future of the Internet taking place in the same building. And that meant I met people involved in that, and we had a bit of a chat sometimes. It was a difficult meeting, I believe. You were looking at a proposed specification which generated an awful lot of comments, an awful lot of concern globally, and another antitrust case against Microsoft because of its behavior in the national standardization processes, for things ranging from committee stacking through to what has been alleged to be bribery or attempted bribery. You know, these are very serious allegations, and the European Union is investigating those things, and well, it should. Let's not jump to any conclusions. The European Commission is competent to do the investigation. But let's just say that it was all very controversial. And I guess this meant that everyone taking part in the BRM was under a lot of pressure. The chairman, Alex Brown, I believe from what I've heard, did a very good job at being impartial. But it would appear that the ability of people, due to just time, to go through the comments was non-feasible. It just couldn't be completed in 1 week. What happens next? The national bodies will have to decide. What we can say is that this proposed specification has generated an unprecedented amount of international outcry, an astonishing amount of comments, and I personally don't think it should be on the fast track at all. And we shouldn't have a second standard for documents when we have one that's perfectly functional. And if Microsoft want more features, they can take part in OASIS, where they are an observer. Anything else? No? It means that we'll have to wait and see what happens in the next 30 days. But it means that the ballot resolution meeting did not come to agreement over the comments generated. So they couldn't get to agreement. So it's another kind of bone of contention. It's another point where the proposal didn't go through, where people couldn't process the concerns. Is it finished? No, we should still be concerned. License proliferation, having a lot of licenses, is a big problem. And whenever someone sits down and thinks, let's make a new license, the first thing that you should do is hit them. But we can't be too prescriptive about what people will do. You know, it's the right of a copyright holder to choose any license they want, so they can just make one up on the spot and apply it, no matter how ill-advised or dangerous that might be. What we can say is that some licenses are far more visible and successful than others. The GPL is somewhere around 70% of code, the GNU GPL version 2, namely. You know, the LGPL and the modified BSD each hold somewhere about 8 or 9%. So even that handful, those three primary licenses right there, cover most of the free software community. So license proliferation is a problem, but most of our code is still compatible. What we need to do is to make sure that people are just aware, always aware, that license incompatibility is a problem. And once we do that, I think we won't have too much of an issue. People will continue to choose the most popular licenses. We just need to keep on educating people and to keep on talking to them and keep on explaining. That's one thing that all of you can really contribute to. You know, just explain to people that choosing a popular, well-proven license is good. It's good for you, it's good for other people, it helps sustainability. Okay. Managers, interesting type of creature, yes. Well, sometimes you can educate managers. It takes a lot of work and violence, but you can do it. I think for managers, the key thing, if you're looking in a business environment and you want to explain to managers why they should choose a license, well, they should choose a popular license so they maximize their benefits, so they can combine code, and they can be living in the assurity that a lot of other people are investing in this license. And that means they're not alone. They're not maintaining the basic legal risk on their own if, for instance, let's say the license was challenged in court. I think that's a good benefit. And when it comes to things like talking to people about why they should choose a license, let's say the GNU GPL, I actually think that's a really easy sell. People used to think it was a really difficult sell because the GNU GPL has copyleft. It maintains its freedoms and everyone can make use of them. And for companies, that means you can modify and share the code that they generate. Now, people thought that was terrifying in a business environment initially when they heard about it, but it works really well. The great benefit of something like the GNU GPL is sustainability. It's about having a code base that you will have participation in, and where if other people take it and build on it and enhance it, you'll be able to get that back and bring it in. That type of sustainable ICT concept is now at the forefront of management decisions. So I think that's one thing to always emphasize. Okay. Everyone terrified into silence. All right then, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you very much for your time. I'm going to be around tomorrow as well at the Free Software Foundation Europe desk, so just come up to me. I've got millions of business cards with me, and I can never be stopped talking.